har lovet dere spørsmål og svar. Det skal vi holde, men vi må ta en 5 minutters rist mens vi setter oss her, og vi skjærer ned da denne spørsmålstillingen til en halv time etterpå. Det er mer muligheter i morgen. 5 minutter og rist.
It is to Mr. Mullen. Then I would recommend to talk to one of the agents in the desert and the witness asked what is the most important thing to know on earth today. And the answer was, I am that I am. What does that mean?
I'm not Dr. Wolf, I'm Jim, but I think the basis of the statement was I wasn't talking to an extraterrestrial myself, but I think the basis of it is that all is one, everything is connected. And even in my partner on the TV show I did was is one of the top war leaders in the world, the aura of the electromagnetic field that's around every living thing. And when they even cut off the arm of a tree or something and then take the photographs later, the aura energy, the electromagnetic field, something shows up in brilliant photography. So I think that's basically that everything is connected. There is just one source of one infinite creator. We're all part of that, the one source of the infinite creator.
Wasn't the same answer that Moses did get in the desert from the burning bush? He said, I am that I am. That's the name of God.
Well, there's definitely a lot of theories that some of the miracles in the Bible possibly were done by extraterrestrial technology being shown. So if they were in contact back then, it's quite possible that they were hearing the same statements.
Thank you. There have been talking a lot about meeting a UFO or alien, but what about the reactions the human being got up from meeting like that? How much time are you spending that study?
Well, the reaction is totally dependent on the level of consciousness of the person who had the experience. And our finding is that most people, it's a life-altering event. And when you see an object up close or actually have a meeting, our research teams have had events where these extraterrestrials have been outside of the craft and communicated with us. There have been people who have been elated, and there have been people who have been terrified. And this speaks not to the nature of the phenomenon or the intent of the extraterrestrials. It speaks to the nature of the human who has the experience. For example, as a doctor, I might examine a baby that's 2 years old, and one will be very happy to have me look, and the next one will be screaming and terrified and everything as I look into their ears with an otoscope. So it's not that the device is different, and it's not that the stimulus is different, but people react differently. I will say here, and I'm going to probably drop a very large bomb, which I haven't talked about today, but which I think you should know, is that there is the actual UFO phenomenon that's extraterrestrial, and there's a much larger, more reported, and more publicly visible faux phenomenon, FAUX, or false phenomenon, which is the counterintelligence project, which utilizes advanced extraterrestrial electronics to induce false extraterrestrial contact. Especially so-called abduction phenomenon. We have interviewed witnesses who have been military operatives who have worked on squads or teams that have conducted these abductions to make them look extraterrestrial, but in reality they are part of a counterintelligence covert program to do a number of things, but the agenda of which is pretty obvious if you consider why they would want to scare the public on this subject. But I think that's why you have to be very careful. Unfortunately, the UFO community is what my friends at NASA call a non-selective filter, which means that it doesn't, they don't have a filter at all. Everything comes put in, everything is verified as being real. There are no standards to distinguish this. So you'll find people who are journalists and artists and all kinds of people writing extensive books about an alleged extraterrestrial contact, and they haven't done their homework to find out, is it extraterrestrial, is it covert human programs? But what we've done for 7 years is to penetrate deeply into those kinds of programs to find out what kinds of technologies exist to simulate the mutilations and the abductions and what have you. And we have found that indeed most of what is reported in the popular media and in the popular books, particularly coming out of America, is, I think, a false phenomenon that has been deliberately put into the world as disinformation. You have to understand one of the tenets of counterintelligence technique is that if there's an important phenomenon going on in Ecuador or Mexico, what you want everyone to be thinking about is the false phenomenon which is being concocted somewhere else. So you set up a decoy event. And this is the classic counterintelligence technique, and it's been used extremely effectively in the UFO world, because the UFO world has no funding, it has no scientific laboratories that it owns, it's a disconnected and very disorganized process. And so, for the most part, the cases that you will hear and read about related to contact and what have you are, in my opinion, a part of a disinformation campaign.
Everyone I've been talking to believe in UFOs, but one thing that make them not believe it, that they don't believe that they can come to Earth because of the speed of light. And I wonder how they are able to come here. How they can, if they travel beyond dimension or what they do.
Yes,
the problem is that, you know, mainstream scientific community, you judge this question from the point of view of just the three or four dimensional time-space continuum. But in the very moment, you deal with, let me say, quantum physics, with the more fringe areas of the latest physics, including the Einstein model, including David Bohm, and so on and so far, you realize that we don't live in a four-dimensional universe, but in an 8, 9, 10, maybe more dimensional universe, and you have a way to cover these distances, not in the three-dimensional space or four-dimensional space-time continuum, but in a shortcut to another dimension. And there is, for example, the theory Albert Einstein formulated that gravity is distorting the space-time continuum. And in the very moment you build up powerful gravitational fields, you can warp, so to say, space and go from one place to the other in zero time.
Also, you know, keep in mind, people need to be have enough humility to recognize that 1997 Earth science is not the apex of all knowing in the universe. That most of what there is to know, we do not know. And most of what there is to yet be discovered, we haven't discovered. And that, indeed, what's more important, I like in the question, or not your question, but people's reaction that you've encountered, which is quite understandable, to the Aboriginal in Australia in an F-16 flyover at the Faster Than the Speed of Sound, and looking up at it and proclaiming that it was a hallucination because he didn't have an understanding physically of how to send something that weighs hundreds of tons propelling at the Mach 2 or 3 or what have you through the atmosphere. Now, you know, this is very much like, I don't know if you saw the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy. The Gods Must Be Crazy, a very good parallel. Someone throws Coke bottle out of an airplane flying over the African jungle, and some aboriginals pick it up, and they turn this thing into such a thing of power and mystery that they start having wars over it, and debates on it, and it's something that came from the gods, etc., and so on. And I think in many respects, the way that we've reacted to the phenomenon is very much like that. We're behaving like the aboriginals who picked up the Coke bottle. I think a more important thing to point out is that, however, the phenomenon, the data is there to support that it is real. Then the question becomes, how can we understand the physics behind it? And point of fact, those physics have already been understood. And I don't want to go into more detail than I need.
Here we had to change the tape, so a little of the information in this part is missing.
On a mountain right near overlooking the Ellis Range, had the interesting experience independently of being on a spiritual path where he was learning through the Rosicrucians to astrally project, you know, the word astral projection, in other words, to send his subtle electromagnetic body out of his hard physical body. Now, a lot of people debate whether this is possible. I'm certain it is, and it's been recorded since time immemorial that people have this ability. I personally had this experience last night. I was astrally projecting outside the hotel. I don't know why I had that happen last night, but I did. But he was telling me that he was having this experience, and he was laying in his meditation, and he, for the first time, he was successful in projecting his subtle body out of his hard physical body, and he went out. He went right out into the atmosphere and slammed into an extraterrestrial spacecraft just about to come through the crossing point of light. Okay? And they were still in that sub-electromagnetic phase, so that they were primarily in what you and I would call, in the vernacular, the near-astral realm. And this is true. He slammed into it. It rocked the entire craft. The ETs turned to him and said, "My God, why don't you watch where you're going?" And now, true story. This is true. And I know that this actually happened. And what happened in that case is that the extraterrestrial vehicle, which if it were back into this phase, or dimension, if you want to call it, I don't speak of dimensions because I think it's a misnomer, back into this phase, would have been a solid object, a technological device. If it landed on your foot, it would have crushed it, you would have felt it, yada, 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 yada. But its technology has flipped it into a phase that you and I would identify as this, like an aura, or a near astral phase, and that is what it goes into. So they go in and out of this crossing point of light. And the crossing point of light is a very key thing, because when you go through the crossing point of light and you cross that veil by going through the sound barrier, we never thought we could do it before we did it, what you find yourself in is this near astral or sub-electromagnetic field, which is very, very close to what you experience when you're having a flying dream. And so when you're traveling in that state, you're not traveling in linear time-space. You're traveling through a aspect or dimension which permits travel through vast distances of space at multiples of the speed of light. Now, so if you can, you know, put that into a short explanation to your friends, maybe they'll understand.
I was just going to add that Dr. Wolf, when he worked in Area 51, said one of the ways they are doing it, it is ties in with that, is by biomolecular computers, and it's done by dematerialization. A lot of people in the Dulce, New Mexico area, where they had the secret underground base, watch ships go in and out of the hills that way. But the other thing he learned working 5 years at Dulce in Area 51 was, because I asked him, I said, "What did you learn from these beings?" And one of the main things is that the human mind has no idea really how powerful our thoughts are and how powerful our minds really can be, and what is faster than the speed of light is thought, and these entities, these beings, use those thought forms tied in with these molecular computers to
in mind too that communication telemetry, telemetry being communication, say, from mission control to a spacecraft at the moon, that the telemetry systems are being modulated through computers and computer models, but that they are interfacing with thought. So that if you want to say this is a computer and I want to turn this on, I don't have to touch it or speak to it. I think to it and it turns on. Same thing with these spacecraft. They're wired into the thought process. Now, I know this sounds like science fiction, but it isn't. Our research team has used this in our protocols where we enter into a state of consciousness where we can remote view the spacecraft and vector it into a landing situation. And when that occurs, we then connect to their telemetry systems with coherent thought. If you have coherent light and a laser, well, the whole group gets into coherent thought and directs it in. And that's why we get these landings and these events take place. Now, it sounds like a bunch of nonsense until you start thinking about the fact that the distances of material universe and the speed of light are such that the speed of light at 186,000 miles per second is too slow. You know, even the closest planet we have, Mars, on average is about 1 hour away at the speed of light. So that if you had a robot, a type car or rover on the surface of Mars, and it was about to go over a 2,000-foot cliff, by the time it sent the signal back to JPL, and JPL corrected its course and sent the coordinates back that it could take a right turn, 2 hours at least would have elapsed, at which time you'd have a $2 billion piece of scrap metal at the bottom of the cliff. So even to explore our closest planetary neighbor, the speed of light is just altogether too slow. So that by definition, any interstellar capable civilization will have to have begun to utilize technologies which go through that crossing point of light, and believe me, they're going to look like magic to you and to me. They're going to look like things that you would read about in a mystic handbook, but it just turns out that that's exactly right. But stepping back a few hundred years, imagine going to someone 200 years ago or 300 years ago and showing them a flashlight or a hologram or a laser, the simplest device that we have today and take for granted, it would be magic to them. In fact, if you went to Salem, Massachusetts 300 years ago, you'd be burned at the stake as a witch if you possessed a flashlight, because it would be considered supernatural, and therefore they would have killed you. So we have to have enough humility to step back a little bit and realize that in a universe that's 20,000 million years old, 20 billion years old, or somewhere thereabouts, that perhaps one of those stars out of the trillions of them will have a planet around it that may have evolved a few thousand years ahead of us. Extrapolate, if you will, where we are today versus 100 years ago. We were in horse and buggies. Now go forward thousands of years at that exponential rate of technological development. Right. It boggles the mind. And so you have to begin to realize that these technologies are going to be utilizing laws of physics, laws of the universe, which in the non-covert world have not even begun to have the questions asked about them yet. super secret weapons system in space that blows them out of the sky. Now, I think that that is the real danger of a disclosure. And frankly, I would suggest that we have enough people who are willing to stand up and say, wait a minute here. Maybe we have a brain or something going on here. And so I would strongly suggest that we consider trying to get the subject to come out ourselves so that we can somehow establish the framework of the truth of the subject.
Dr. Grimm, did I understand correctly that the doctor can tell you that you only have a short time to live because of metastatic cancer?
No wise physician comments on how long anyone has to live. I will say that, no, I have been diagnosed with metastatic malignant melanoma, which is the most aggressive cancer. It appeared in a fashion that's very mysterious. Right now, I am free of any problems, but they keep recurring. My right hand assistant has metastatic cancer, and it's gone throughout her body now to the point that she may not live more than a few months. And so we're doing everything we can. It's one of these unfortunate coincidences that at about the time that we had penetrated the covert program and began to brief the most important people in the world on the subject, that both of us had this health problem, but it hasn't caused me to even pick up. I mean, it's not anything that I worry about, except that I have four children that I need to take care of. But other than that, I'm not concerned about it. And, you know, having it won't deter me from doing what I think is correct to do. I'll just say that if it turned out that this had gone internal in my situation, right now they've been external. If it had gone internal, usually it's 3 to 6 months. So we're trying to do everything we can using traditional approaches and holistic approaches to try to keep ourselves strong and hope for the best.
What are we going to do now here? And what's the world going to do? And you want us to have this conference here in Norway, right? Where a lot of these people that you're talking about will come and disclose these things, right? And started a list here, and a lot of people have signed up to start working in coalition or in connection with the CAP, Coalition for the United States, right? And the list is up there, I have more here, and let's try and do that here in Norway, huh? How about people? You want to do that?
Norway would be a great venue. What I would say about that is that no individual is that important. What is important, because we're really all one soul, in my opinion, what is really important is that we collectively will our future to be one of universal peace rather than the war. And that won't happen unless people get involved. I had someone in the bathroom, I was taking a leak, come up to me and say, well, you know, what can one individual person do? And I said, well, everything. And I'm really just a country doctor from North Carolina. I mean, I really am. I'm really. And what I say to people is that you can, through articulating the knowledge, articulating a vision of where we can go, and strategically working with other people in coalitions, make a huge difference in the world. And every single person in this room knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who is either a senior government official, a military official, a witness, someone involved in corporate industry, someone who's involved in foundations that grant funds, someone who's involved. All of you, every single person here is somehow connected. If you will talk to your people in your network, if you don't know them, they'll know them. And if they don't know them, they'll know someone who knows them. And all, I mean, literally, going around with people in the White House and this and that. I said, no, it is not. It has all been set up. The meeting with the CIA director was the result of someone hearing me in a lecture telling someone else about the talk who was a good friend of the director of Central Intelligence who then set up the meeting. I mean, literally, all of these things have happened. All of our witnesses have come about that. I mean, my uncle designed a lunar module that landed on the moon, took Neil Armstrong to the moon. He was a senior project engineer. So I had an interest, but through working through those networks, although he didn't know anything about the subject, he was able to help, and other people in aerospace have been able to help build this network of evidence and witnesses and contacts. And that's what I think you can do in Norway. And Norway is such an incredibly important country because of its tradition of championing issues related to peace, issues related to disarmament, and what have you. And I think that for that reason, that in this audience today, I am quite certain that there are people who could help move this forward in a quantum leap. And that's what my appeal is.
I have a comment as well as a major question. First of all, the comment is that maybe it's because you are three men giving lectures to the day. Maybe not. But there's one aspect that you haven't talked about, and that's the nature of human beings. Why is it so difficult for us to grasp the phenomena of UFOs, to understand it? We are very fascinated, and many people have experienced it undercover or private. But I believe that because we are not only intelligent beings, we can agree on intellectual level about how we are energy beings and stuff. But the experience, that the important experience here on Earth is being in matter, being in density. And that is a very, this body and this thing we are, this picture we see, the reality we experience here on Earth, is a very cherished one. And that is because we are emotions. And that goes from deep depression to ecstatic experience. And if you put UFO experiences in this context, then you discover that just dealing with it, and one of the important things in this dream that we have here is the time and our three or four dimensional way of seeing it. It's very important and we like it very much. And we have done for thousands of years. So if we want to kind of change it, this is a dramatic experience, not only for us or the military guys who might be on top of the hierarchy of power, but for everyone. At some level, this is very traumatic to understand that you can actually dissolve this material and you can drive through other realities and find out yourself being a different corner of this box and the universe. So, this aspect of emotion, I don't think we know too much about it so far. We haven't gone too much into it. The question I have is about what you call zero level technology, which that you said was kind of conscious connected technology. In that case, there shouldn't be any danger that we could use it because we're not developed that far yet.
What is your question?
I'm just asking. Maybe she can understand it.
I know what you're saying, and in point of fact, I wish it were that way. But the zero point field of energy, as well as technologies that interface with conscious intelligence, are very definitely can be used in a malignant fashion and can be used in ways that are harmful. There are, well, Thalamus, I know that there is a program that operates 24 hours a day that engages in what you might call psychic warfare. There are programs that are utilizing technologies that interface with nonlinear reality in the zero point field and thought that are attempting to create diseases, that are experimenting with all kinds of creatives of the mad scientist's nightmare. But yet it can be done. And the point I make is that when you insert the human condition into this, and you're very correct in pointing this out, you're inserting human will, and human will can utilize any technology and any knowledge for the good or for the bad. And I think that what we have to do, knowing that humans are always going to be imperfect and there's always going to be shades of gray, is to resolve as a species not to utilize these new technologies and this new knowledge in a way which further causes warfare or is used for weapons of destruction or for negative purposes. This is, can only be done by people knowing they exist and then determining that it won't be used this way. It can be done, for example, the zero-point energy devices, which by setting up counter-rotating electromagnetic fields, helps tap into a vast reservoir called the zero-point field of energy. These devices are relatively simple, but they can be used for rather naughty purposes. I think eventually, once this is proliferating around the world, that they will need to be somehow tied into a GPS system, a global positioning satellite system, and monitored so that if they are tampered with, they go offline and don't function anymore. Because clearly, for the next, even if this technology were introduced in the next 20 years, and if there was a huge change in human consciousness, humans are humans. And I think that we need to figure out ways to have the checks and balances in place to ensure that these new technologies, which we need because we are killing the planet technologically in other ways, are only used for life-supporting and positive humanitarian purposes. Right now, you have the 100% opposite situation, where because the subject is not known about generally or accepted, you have extraordinarily powerful covert entities and corporations doing some rather nasty things with these technologies. So it is a crisis. Ultimately, you know, I was talking to a person at the Joint Chiefs of Staff about this, and you get into a conundrum where you really say, well, ultimately, the source of this problem is a spiritual disease rooted in fear and disease and insecurity and greed and all these things. And the solution is a spiritual solution and the changing of consciousness, the collective will of people to come together and to decide to do the right thing and to forswear the use of these technologies for violence and for weapons of mass destruction. It is really a crisis in humanity. Even confronting this seemingly all-powerful covert military-industrial cabal that's running this, it's more of a paper tiger. They can be confronted. They can be transformed. But it has to be done wisely. And I'll share with you a dream I had this summer in England when I was there in the cross circles and things. And I had this beautiful dream, and it happened several nights in a row, where we were being stalked by this ferocious and carnivorous and deadly lion. And in the course of the dream, by carefully engaging it, it became, there was still a huge and powerful lion, but it became like a pussycat and rolled over on its back and would let us pet it and play with it and tumble around with it. And I would use this sort of as a metaphor to say what can be done. I really believe that these swords can be transformed into plowshares, and I really think that we should view our government leaders and our military leaders as educable, that the whole situation can and will be transformed, and we have to have faith, hope and faith that that can happen, because there is no other way that we can get out of the current conundrum.
Jim Kunoff mentioned the ether stones in Peru. I understand that is another interesting and unexplained phenomenon, the so-called Nazca lines and Nazca figures. What is the
balance view
on this? Thank you.
Actually, I visited Peru last year and I was flying over the Nazca lines and I did some research inside, and one fact which is rather unknown in the public is that under the Nazca lines are big
subterranean passageways, and which you can't enter because some of them are just blocked. And it's too dangerous anyway. But it is a big, gigantic, ancient array of different forms of fame. And actually some of the Nazca lines, they just go from one mountaintop to the other one, and they just continue on the next mountain and so on and so far. So you can really appreciate this phenomenon only from the air. And I heard from the people in Nazca that they have a lot of UFO sightings there. Nearly every second of the night at dusk, and they have UFO sightings there. And I unfortunately didn't have one, and because I didn't stay overnight in Nazca. But I can tell you that there's no conventional explanation for the Nazca lines. A German archaeologist, Maria Reicher, who was a very respected and wonderful lady who spent all her life cataloging the Nazca lines, she originally had the theory that it might be a big astronomical calendar, but she already gave up this point of view and now says it is a mystery, I don't know what it is. And the theories they had for the last decades about Nazca were everything from an ancient sports ground, but we really had to make big jumps because it goes from one mountaintop to the other, so the ancient Peruvian sportsman had to jump for 300 meters, and I don't think they were so good at it. And now we have the new theory about the procession array, which is nonsense too, because you can make a procession over over a canyon, and so on and so far. So we really have to admit we have an unsolved mystery in Nazca.
I'd like to ask the guy to the right. Okay. One question. Maybe you have the thought before me. But many times when you are discussing these numbers, like UFOs, you are met with the same questions. It is not possible. So I answer, why not? Because we have our rules, we have our Newton, our Einstein, and then I have this way to compare. Maybe you won't understand. The last guy I spoke to, he was a student with 6 years of studying physics. And I was telling him, I brought him to the conference, and he lost the kid. So I told him, yes, I'm interested. And then I told him, you know what a letter is? A letter that you are climbing. Yes? How many steps are there in a letter? It depends on the size, of course. But the human race, they had reached one of the steps in a letter. But how many steps we have to go to reach a higher level, or maybe the top level, too far away from us. Nobody knows. So I think the letter is the best way to try to explain to people how it is with us. We are not fully educated in any person. So we are in one of the steps in this level. I want to know the answer from the guy to the right, if he agrees.
I've asked several researchers what questions they have ready in case they came face to face with an extraterrestrial. And I said, do you have a list made out? Because I think in the not too distant future, you'll probably have a conscious contact from all indications I'm seeing. And as far as what you're referring to, if I understand your question correctly, one of the problems is that I was almost terminated from my flying career because of the ridicule factor. Several co-pilots turned me in. I thought I was
Looney Tunes crazy, and I had to go through 4 days of flight testing and such to save my career. Unfortunately, John Lear, who really started all this with the airline, being an airline pilot and got into this cover-up stuff, he was terminated. So a lot of people ask, why don't pilots report more of what they see in this regards, and that's why it's a pretty high casualty rate if you take it too seriously. And considering there's probably 350,000 airline pilots worldwide right now, and there's only about three of us that are actually speaking on the subject, and one of the pilots is a debunker, so it's not a real high position to be in, I guess. But you have to realize the old statement of a person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. You just can't force the information. You just have to kind of put it out and take them to the fountain and they drink if they want to. But one of the things we didn't get into here, which not too many people discuss, but from a lot of the people I've met with that have worked in this research is the ultra-terrestrial factor. Because once you get into manipulating the atoms and molecules and such, they have found there's a higher spectrum of the light field, which is what people that see auras can see. And there's definitely entities from other worlds. I'm not saying the spirit world, but ultra-terrestrial is what the government knows them as. And just they could be in a room right now, we can't see them, but they are definitely in existence based on our research, and the government is, at least the United States, is quite aware of it. And they have a lot to do with helping out with things that are going on about us, whether it's political or spiritual or raising the consciousness. So that's something to consider too, is not just conscious, touchy-feely material being we're dealing with, but there are unseen forces. You can call them angels if you want, but they do exist based on what I've found out.
I have to correct the comment on the pilot situation from a more international point of view. You're right regarding the pilot situation in the USA, but altogether in the files of NASA research we have 4,000 UFO reports from international airline pilots. I personally interviewed Werner Rutter, the chief pilot of Lufthansa, who even was the pilot of the presidential plane in the 1960s. And he was a member of the board of directors of Lufthansa today. And he recorded 3 UFO sightings in public and on German television. 3 UFO sightings he had. Swiss Air, which definitely is a good airline, released about 10 pilot reports from their pilots, and we have people from Swiss Air who spoke openly about 3 UFO sightings of their crews. And then we have the situation in Mexico. I personally interviewed 2 Aeromexico pilots. Aeromexico is the main airline in Mexico, next to Mexicana, how we pronounce it. And they had near collisions with UFOs. One of them was approaching Mexico City International Airport when suddenly out of a cloud, a silver disc-shaped craft was shooting, and he yelled in the microphone, we're gonna die, we have an unknown traffic. The traffic is the code word for any kind of object they have. And unidentified unknown traffic in 12 o'clock position. Why it didn't warn us in the tower? But the tower didn't have this one on the radar. So they nearly collided, but personally, just before the collision, the UFO made an evasive movement and shot away. In another approach of a different Aeromexico plane, another pilot told me, and they actually collided, and after he made an emergency landing, they found out that the landing gear was cut like you cut a piece of sheet, very clear, clean cut. And they landed without any injured people or whatever, just the plane was damaged. And another young Mexico pilot told me when he passed by the Popocatépetl volcano, the volcanic area, Popocatépetl means what we want to, the other volcano, and they had a formation of five UFOs just floating this way here, and then they saw a big mothership a little bit later, a big cigar-shaped craft. So you do have pilots who talk openly about it. And I tell you about Mexico, the situation is so open, but the air traffic controllers are cooperating with the UFO resources because they wanted to know if what they have on the radar screen is up to the state or something real. So they communicate with the UFO research community to find out. They write down that they have UFOs on the radar screen, and then the UFO researchers compare it and tell them, look, here somebody filmed it and you have it on the radar. Great. We had 1 week in September of 1994 when every night they had a UFO sighting in the Toluca Mapping area, and every morning UFO researchers checked the area and found a new crop formation. Like a crop circle, that's a formation. In one night, they had a UFO in the Toluca Mapping area for 3 hours when the people living there, hundreds of people, saw a craft coming down, little ones coming out of it, forming a crop formation. Next night, a lady filmed a luminous being in the same crop formation, and so on and so forth. They invited me in the tower of Mexico City International Airport, where I spent 3 hours, and I filmed with my own camera 4 UFOs on the radar screen. They saw and they explained to me these are definitely UFOs, because from a hovering position, they increase speed to 2 times the speed of sound, Mach 2. So there are people and countries which are very, very open. It's unfortunate that in the USA there are the restrictions. It's unfortunate that even in Oslo, maybe they don't let me in the tower for a night or two. But there are other countries which are very open regarding the UFO situation.
I think there was a misunderstanding. What I meant, though, is I'm referring to airline pilots and pilots in general, professional pilots that actually go on the lecture circuit and take a serious stand. And the Japan Airline captain in 1986 was terminated from his career. Flying Tigers had a very similar incident over the Pacific in the exact same area that the Japan Airlines crew had the incident. And when they landed in the Narita Airport in Tokyo, they were taxied off and debriefed and told that you want to keep your careers, you don't talk about this to anybody, and they didn't. And so they weren't able to back up the Japanese airline captain's story. But I can rattle off hundreds of stories and sightings from pilots, and yes, they'll talk about it, but they don't go out in public talking to 500 people. That's when you go beyond the risk factor. But it's worth it for such a monumental bit of information you put out to beautiful people like yourselves. So.
I'd also comment that this is what you're hearing here from Jim is a very good example in the architecture of how secrecy is maintained. Number one, it's maintained through ridicule in the public sector. It's not an easy as an emergency doctor to be involved at the level I've been involved with. Thank God I was respected by my colleagues before I got involved in this business as a good doctor. Otherwise, I think I would not be practicing now. And interestingly, from the point of view of government programs, the people in government who don't know about the subject are terrified that it's going to ruin their careers if they get involved with it because there's so much ridicule factor. You'll have Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw on the news making jokes about them, as will their political opponents. On the other hand, if you're in a covert situation, there's something called TWEP, Terminate with Extreme Prejudice, tweet. And believe me, it exists. And this is where you kill someone if they violate the secrecy of one of these unacknowledged special access projects. I'm working with people who are under tweet risk, and they take it very seriously, and this is not a spy novel, this is real. And even on a lesser level, I spent time with Senator Barry Goldwater at his home in outside of Phoenix, and he had run for president of the United States. I don't know how many people in Norway know the name Senator Barry Goldwater, but he's a very famous political figure in the United States, arch-conservative of the Republican Party back in the 60s. up to discuss the subject, he invited me to his home. And he related a story that you've only heard partially in public, and I'm going to tell you the whole story now. And he knew a general known as Curtis LeMay. And Curtis LeMay was the general who said, we're going to bomb the Vietnamese back to the Stone Age with nuclear weapons, if he had a chance. But at any rate, he and Curtis LeMay were good friends. Barry Goldwater is a general in the Air Force Reserves, and of course Curtis LeMay was the general in the Air Force. Well, back in the early 60s, Curtis LeMay, this general, was at that time commander of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, to which the extraterrestrial biological entities and much of the debris had been sent. Barry Goldwater asked Curtis LeMay, because he had heard through other people in the Air Force that there was something called the Blue Room, where there was a large amount of this evidence and extraterrestrial material stored. And he asked Curtis LeMay if he could get in there and see it. Now keep in mind that this is a senator in the United States Senate who was on the Armed Services Committee. These are the people who write the checks for the military in the Senate. Curtis LeMay turned to him with an absolute serious tone and said, Barry, actually he cursed at him. He said, God damn it, Barry, I can't even get into that area. And if you ever ask me about it again, I will personally see that you are court-martialed. Now, I asked Barry Goldwater, was Curtis LeMay joking, saying this to a senator who was running for president or was about to be running for president of the United States? And he says, no, he was serious as a heart attack. And he never asked about it again. Now, I mean, that is how serious this subject is. This is the biggest secret in the history of the world. And believe me, people laugh and ridicule the fact that, oh, well, if this were real, we'd know about it. Not so. This thing is taken very seriously, and extreme measures have been and are being used to keep it secret.
I have a question to read about the organization behind the cover-up. Could you say anything more about the structure and the actors behind it? And have you tried to remote you the organization?
Well, I haven't had to remote you because I've met with them. I have met with members of the so-called NJ-12 entity and people who are in a senior contracting position on the high-tech end of it. I have also met with the head of Army Intelligence and other people who have been involved. The architecture of it is as follows. The covert entity, which has been called Majestic 12 or Majority 12, and also more recently known as PI-40, I don't know what this initial stand for, is an international, multinational entity with large representation from a deep cover covert military and intelligence sectors, but most of the representation exists in the high-tech private industrial sector, and certain religious orders and certain religious organizations have significant representation. There are very large financial as well as international industrial interests represented in this entity. There are about 200 or 300 people who are in the core policy-making entity or group, and then about 25 people or families are at the very, very top in terms of providing some kind of continuity of management of policy and discussion. I have had the opportunity to sit with members of this group, and I have corresponded with other members of the group to discuss what we were doing. They take what CSETI is doing extremely seriously, and about one-third of NJ-12, nearly a half actually, but a solid one-third of them support what we are trying to achieve. They actually want the information to come out. They actually want the technologies to be used for peaceful purposes, and they really have kind of seen the light. This is why when I say to you, no one should be viewed as an enemy of what we're trying to do here. Everyone should be viewed as educable and as being able to really begin to understand that our future and very much our survival as a species may and how we respond to this challenge over the next decade, in fact, perhaps over the next 12 months. And but the group known as NJ-12 is real. I tell you something now that I've not said before, and that is after our meeting at the Pentagon as the Joint Chiefs of Staff in April, a senior operative there got back to our team and said, even though prior to our briefing, they had not been able to receive a briefing or have any information on the subject. In fact, they didn't even know if it was real. They had been able, based on information I gave them, to confirm the existence as of May of 1997 of the NJ-12 entity. And this is a very significant announcement I've just made to those of you who study this field. And this is someone from...
Here we had to change the tape, so a little of the information is missing.
During a top secret air show at which an alien reproduction vehicle, a reverse engineered vehicle that we had built based on extraterrestrial technology, was test flown for him and a group of other VIPs. And I have a witness who is a genius with 396 patents to his name who was there with him and can be subpoenaed by the Congress about this. So I know of the people who are in the political structure who know, but they would not let their colleagues know, and it is a very clandestine and very, very tightly held entity. But we have been able, through the networking that I have done, to identify a significant number of individuals, and I think more importantly, a significant number of corporate entities. You saw on this one clip that Jim had that they showed all the materials that have been reverse engineered, such as fiber optics and lasers and what have you, and that is true, by the way. I knew about that 6 years ago and was speaking about it publicly 6 years ago, long before Philip Corso made his book announcement, because I'm working with people who've actually worked in these areas and were involved in these projects. But the corporate connection here is very significant. And you have to understand that if you really want to keep something secret, you privatize it. And I mean that quite literally. No one knows the formula for Coca-Cola, and no one's going to find out. And if you really want to keep a secret, you give it to contract it to a corporate entity, but then you've got double secrecy. You've got top secret, compartmentalized, national security authorization that is extended into the private sector for groups like Lockheed and Northrop and E-Systems. But you also have proprietary, copyright, technical secrecy that is even stronger than governmental secrecy, believe it or not. Corporate secrecy has more alacrity and more ability to create areas of secrets than even many of the government programs. But when you combine the two, you get something which I call the hybrid entity. Now, I don't mean an extraterrestrial hybrid, I mean an organizational hybrid, which is quasi-governmental and quasi-private or industrial. And it is neither, but it's both. And it takes on a life of its own. Eisenhower, when he left office in 1961, his last speech to the world, to the nation, said the following in so many words: beware the military-industrial complex. The reason he made that statement, which is one of the most famous speeches of any U.S. president, it was made by a five-star general. It was made by a conservative Republican, two-term president. But he knew, I have people on my team who are witnesses who worked with Eisenhower at the Corso. He knew about the subject. He had seen the extraterrestrial materials and debris. But but somewhere between 1954 and 1957, there were massive breakthroughs in the technology, and it was seized by the industrial private sector and a small group of people within the covert apparatus of the military-industrial complex, and they began to lie to the president. I have a witness who will state on the record, will both testify before the Congress of the United States, that when the president tried to find out about the status of these projects, he was routinely lied to. It was stolen out of the normal checks and balances of the constitutional chain of command from the most powerful superpower in the world. Now, this is exactly what happened, and it is for that reason that it is still something which sends a chill through the people who know about it. For example, if you don't know about the subject and you're powerful in the world, in your arrogance, you will say, well, this subject can't be true because where I know about it, because I know everything. And that's how some people react. But once you find out, I've had meetings with those kind of people. But then you have another kind of person. They realize it's true, or they come to realize the truth is true, and they are so terrified that it is true that they leave it alone. Because they say, if there's an entity that has this and has the power to keep this thing wrapped up the way they have, I'm not going to grab that tiger by the tail. You know, I'm not going to get involved. So you get into, they get paralyzed with either fear or denial. So what we're looking for are a few good men and women who are willing to not respond to fear or denial, but come together in a coalition and move this thing out into the public, and we're certain it can be done.
Thank you so much. I said half an hour discussion. We have soon reached 1 hour, and I see the audience is 3/4 of full, so it's very hard for me to set an end on this. Nevertheless, there are four more people on the list, so please be short, and we finish afterwards.
Is there a kind of a cooperation between the U.S. government and the aliens today?
She asked if there was cooperation between the U.S. government and the aliens, and I think not. There are people who think so. The U.S. government, though, you have to define it.
Yeah, I have to disagree with Steve on that one. Based on my research, I'd say it's they're definitely working. I would say the secret government, not the government that the people vote for in the United States anyway, but the secret government is definitely working some form of agreement with at least one species of beings. Some high-level people I've met with said it could be up to four groups. At least they know of at least four groups coming here. They definitely got one agreement with one race.
That's clear, not about medical conditions, but you said that your team sent in the experts for getting aliens upon landing. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how can you show the video footage for that? Or was that supposed to be the collage of the video?
Well, some of it's in this collage that we put together. Some of the ones that you saw were actually from some of the expeditions that we have been on. We have not had real good success. Really close encounters that happened, such as in Mexico, the cameras failed, the electronics failed, and we did not have cameras that were free of the need to be run off of any electronics. And a number of events have happened where we have gotten images that are more distant, but they look like all the other things you have seen. Unfortunately, we had neither the personnel nor the equipment to do this properly, and it has been a real problem. But we have gotten, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, some pretty good shots. Although I have to tell you that that's not the main purpose of that initiative. I'm certain that there are much better photographs that exist than our team will ever get. And what we're more concerned with is being able to establish a friendly and diplomatic liaison to these life forms, and that's really the main purpose of our team. I think at some point, if there is adequate interest in the world, that you could have a tremendous amount of telemetry and photo and video and movie and sound on site that would be able to be portable and moved into remote areas where we operate. But right now, we really haven't had a great deal of success with that. But I have to admit, it's also not been a very big goal of ours, because our team is consisted mainly of people who are trained in the communication with these life forms rather than in the techniques of photography and videography. Ironically, a number of events have happened right before, right after the person with the camera has left to go home. And I'm not sure what that statement is. I think the statement then may be from the ETs that they would want us to focus on something besides taking pictures of them during these liaisons. We're still working through that, and we try to get the best we can, and it's not been everything we wanted, but we have gotten some good shots of these objects, and they're signaling to us and this sort of thing.
I understand that these experts are interested in us to become a peaceful species. Why are we But before we realize this,
And as long as we had either the deification, the worship of the saviors from out there, or the demonization, and we are not ready for contact yet. And this program of the gentle approach, of the receptiveness check, is a very wise one. On the other hand, both sides are approaching each other step by step in a gentle way which will have a positive result.
I think they're definitely going to have to speed up because technology is outpacing humanity, especially with the, every month we read about a new computer chip going faster and faster, and pretty soon we're going to have thinking computers, and I think these beings are aware of what's, we've gotten some of their toys, and they're watching to see what we're doing with them. The Smithsonian Institute, I think it was about a year and a half ago, even had a very interesting electronic display of first contact, and it was basically going over the examples Michael just did of earlier civilizations and how superior race came in, and then it said preparing contact with extraterrestrial civilizations by the year 2000. This is right there in the Smithsonian Institute, Washington, D.C. I was amazed they put that on. By the way, before I came here, a friend of mine just met with Phil Corso's son. I didn't get the information directly from Phil Corso's son, but he told this individual that Clinton, President Clinton, had the deputy. I don't have any confirmation of this other than the phone call I got that he had just been on the phone with his father, Corso Sr., wanting a full briefing on the Roswell information, and he allegedly made the statement that things were going to be accelerating on this matter very quickly.
We've been working with White House people encouraging that since 1993, shortly after the current president took office, and there's great openness to do that, but of course there are also people who don't want them to do it, and it's a dangerous thing for him to do too aggressively. As one of Bill Clinton's friends told me, who helped get him elected in 92, if he does what you would like him to do, who's going to ensure his safety? And who's to say he won't end up like John Kennedy? So, there are things going forward, but at the same time, there are restraints on that. And they need our leadership. I've been told by people, CIA people who've come into my hometown and have met with me and have said the effect of what we have done is unimaginable within the government and within the covert management of this, and that it has really put everything into free fall. I think things are going to be coming out. I just hope and pray that they let it come out in a way that's positive without trying to create another enemy in space for us to have a war over.
One last point. I think amazingly enough, the TV show X-Files, which is demographically the number one show in the world, was definitely leaked information from high-level sources within the government, and it's worked. I mean, I just got back from Thailand and Burma, and you go in a little village, the kids come out wearing their alien T-shirts with the gray, with the big black eyes on them, and everywhere I go, any place in the world, is the hottest items are the alien things. So especially the pop culture has definitely caught on with the X-File factor, and it really worked to help soften the blow when these statements were made.
Yes, I'm going back a little bit and kind of on two questions and couple of time. The first one is, could you distinguish between a real abduction experience and an implant experience? Why is that the entity of the world has some of them now decided to send this information out?
I don't personally believe there's ever been an abduction. I think there have been contacts. One reason I'm involved with this is when I was 18 years old, I was hiking on a mountain and had a CE4. Close encounters fourth time. But it was not an abduction. I think the things that the syndrome, which Bud Hopkins and others describe, are the prodromal paralysis, the psychomotor paralysis. distinctions, I don't think it's too difficult to distinguish between the two. I know many people who've had direct contact with these objects who are credible. None of them describe the so-called abduction scenario. The abduction scenario is, I think, as it's currently described. By the way, the word abduction is a criminal act of kidnapping. So I think the term itself is xenophobic, and I never use it in association with the actual UFO phenomenon. We don't know enough to say that even if it were happening the way they claim, call it that, I think it's a very dangerous, slippery slope. And we should be careful in the words we choose. But I think that in general, the degree to which people have a psychomotor paralysis, the sort of sense of terror, a free-falling sense of loss of control, et cetera, and so on, as part of that syndrome, those are all things that can be induced electronically and chemically, and have been for over 35 years, almost 40 years. So I think that I'm personally very skeptical about many of those types of reports, and I see in it that it's been spun in a direction to try to create fear in the population and doubt, and to confuse the actual contact experiences with the false ones. That is how you would do something like this in a counterintelligence perspective.
Same thing on the
Yes. Another question you had was?
Yes, why do some of them
But some of the members of MJ-12, she's asking, why would they be in favor? They're just set up. I mean, there are people that I'm working with who know that the type of secrecy and the programs that exist around these secret programs, it's like the layers of an onion, and they the more that this gets wrapped up in super secret projects, the more there is the risk that something very bad can go wrong. And that there could be renegades or factions that do things that are endangering Earth security and the United States national security. I think that they know that also that the government is losing credibility on the subject. One of the conversations I had with the CIA director is that there are more people who believe that these UFOs are real than voting for the President of the United States. And the more that the government stands up and lies about it, they just tend to lose more and more credibility, and people tend to trust them less and less and less. That it is in their own best interest to come clean with this information and to do it as soon as possible. So I think that this argument that we've been making now for 7 years, and intensely for the last 4 years within MJ-12 and within certain military and intelligence and industrial circles, is taking hold and making sense to a lot of these people. Now, there's still not a majority. There's still a minority within that group. But I think that that's changing very rapidly, and I'm optimistic that the truth will be able to be released. Again, the danger is that the cosmic Gulf of Tonkin scenario could be unleashed, where they could do it in such a way that would cause panic and fear in society, and which would enable them to rationalize multi-trillion dollar defense expenditures into the next millennium.
Two more questions, and
then one more little point on that. Regarding the cover explanations we got in this year, and the dummy explanation, and the CIA UFO involvement explanation, you also have to read a little bit between the lines. For example, with the dummy explanation, the U.S. Air Force at least admitted, yes, people who say they saw the bodies told the truth. I mean, the dummy explanation
can't be believed,
because the dummy experiment was in the 1950s and Russell was in 1947. So, I mean, if you take it serious, you have to consider that they sent the dummies 10 years back in time, but they landed by coincidence on a mobile balloon and caused the mobile balloon to crash in the desert of Mexico. This is, of course, a very reasonable scenario, but I think it's more rational to believe in a real UFO crash. Anyway, they admitted people saw bodies. They admitted there's more behind it than just the balloon. So, next thing is, and they never said this was how it was. They presented it as a kind of hypothesis, so they can be wrong. The CIA thing, the same before, the CIA always said, oh, you know, only for a very short period of course of time, in 1952 and 1953, Israel has been a phenomenon not before, not after. Now in the new report, you read they became involved in the phenomenon in 1948. And they were continuing to follow the phenomenon even until the 90s. So at least they admitted we are into the scenery for a very long period of time, from 1 year after the CIA was founded until today. And you have the admittance, yes, we plan the disinformation.
Yes, there's any connection between the pyramids and the ETs, and if there are all of any new evidence?
I believe the pyramids were built with anti-gravity technologies left over from extraterrestrial knowledge from the end of the last Atlantean cycle. That, in fact, the Sphinx, which in my opinion was probably the eastern terminus of Atlantis, is much older than the pyramids, but that some of those technologies persisted, and that they existed all over the world during that time. Interestingly, the people at Los Alamos and JPL in a Newsweek of all interviews stated that they thought that there was such a continent known as Atlantis, and that an asteroid hit in the area of what is now the Atlantic Basin, and that it catastrophically sank, leading to all the flood stories of the ancient lore of the Mayans and the Bible and what have you, but that there had been a very advanced technological civilization that went the way of a massive asteroid hit, and that, in my opinion, the pyramids and the energetics related to them were very advanced mathematical astronomical devices, but that their construction was probably facilitated by using anti-gravity technology, which we are soon going to see again being utilized.
There's a very interesting point regarding the pyramids. The architect of the first pyramid was Imhotep. And Imhotep, according to the Egyptian tradition, was something like the Leonardo da Vinci of the Pyramidion B.C. And the man who bought the hieroglyphics for the law, architecture, medicine, education, political, everything to mankind. And one of the reasons was both to travel on the Milky Way and heavenly celestial bar is a very interesting point. So it's quite important to be a contactee. And the Jewish tradition calls him Enoch, and Enoch was the one who walked with God and disappeared at the age of 365 years. And then we have the hidden book of Enoch and the Slavonic, and in the Ethiopian tradition, which tells a beautiful story of he woke up one night, and one of the figures appeared in the temple, took him to a house of crystal stones surrounded by fire, and he entered the house and was brought into the heavens, that they teaches him everything. The angels teach him everything.
So I do with that. Things from the pyramids when I was out in Egypt is the Edgar Cayce readings of the Hall of Records, which everybody has been looking for. And there's an infrared satellite that was launched years ago, but there are some photos in the secret files of NASA, and I've been trying to get some friends there to get hold of them. We know the file number and what the picture number is, but the Hall of Records is not under the Sphinx, because the Sphinx was moved evidently by anti-gravity, because they knew people with psychic abilities before time was ready would know where the extraterrestrial had buried the vault records, and now it's proving that the Sphinx is definitely much older than they originally thought based on carbon dating. But once we can get hold of the infrared satellite photos, we know the exact location. If they do the soundings, which run about $70,000 to do, similar to when they're looking for oil, we can, submission of the Egyptian government, which is very hard to do, but we could dig up the hall records where they really are, and there would be enough proof right there for mankind that we're not alone and never have been.
Last question?
Oh, please. I have a question. You spoke about the ecosystems and a major change of consciousness around the year 2012. Could you say something more about that and the link between that change and the aim?
I think there's a major change in consciousness going on right now. Just my own feeling is the second coming, and I'm not a real religious person in the sense that, I'm not a fundamentalist or anything like that. I'm pretty open-minded to anybody's religious concepts. I think they were all the religious concepts were given to us by other worlds and interpreted certain ways. But I think the second coming is the Christ consciousness of man realizing who they really are and what their lives are really all about. I don't believe this life is our only one. I never really thought much about it, but since I've been in this research for a long time, I think this Earth life is just one of millions of schools throughout the universe, and I think we continue. And the consciousness is just growing. And the Inca stones kind of show about that too. They need to be on the cover of every major magazine in the world. They are just a fascinating discovery, but they've been hushed up since 1962.
So, thank you. I have to say that it has been extremely interesting, and I'm also glad that the lecturers are keeping their seats and answering questions. I'm sure we could continue hours more this night, but we will continue tomorrow instead. But the same audience is here answering your questions, and there is some other lectures also tomorrow. So I thank you for coming, thank you for paying attention, and thank you for your contribution so much.